Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 18th, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I think we have the best poker cast on any planet until we hear further, right?
Right, exactly. I've been looking at the Yelp reviews and really, really bad poker podcast on Jupiter and Mercury.
So clearly.
Yes.
clearly, we are the best on any planet. I should probably say it that way from now on. Yeah. So what's going on? You're not in town, are you?
No, I'm up in Ohio in the familiarly estate here where I was raised, and hanging out with my brother and sister-in-law and a wonderful niece and nephew, and obviously doing some poker stuff as well too. Headed up to Cleveland in the morning and checking out what will be only for the next few months, the Horseshoe Cleveland, before it rebrands itself into The Rock.
Right.
So, but no, it's been nice. It's always nice to come home.
Did your parents keep your room like a shrine to you? Like, did they keep your little cross-country trophy medals and stuff like in their room, or did they redo it, or how did that work out?
You know, that's a very interesting thing, because for a while they did, and then when I was in college or graduating college or something like that, I get a call from my mom. She's like, yeah, it's kind of time for you to come and pack this stuff up. And it's not like they even needed the room. They're just like, you know, it's time. And I'm like, fine, whatever. So I box it all up, and then now my niece's room is my old room, so looks dramatically different than when I was growing up.
Wow.
Lots of horses and pink.
So not that dramatically different.
Very nice.
Good stuff.
Oh, but the first item came up on my most recent travels too. You know, it's always fun when I'm talking to poker managers, because they always, I don't want to say gossip, that's the wrong thing, but they like to talk about things that are going on in the world. And it's always, hey, did you hear about the – and one of these items I had heard about, the other one I haven't. But, you know, we've talked about poker thieves on the show before, so this is not really completely new. But since there's a couple recent incidents, I thought it might be interesting to bring it back up on the show and just kind of remind folks that, first of all, don't steal. That's bad, right?
Don't steal. Don't even steal the blinds if you're playing with me.
Exactly.
If I'm in them.
That's allowed and that's legal, but don't steal chips and money from anyone, right?
Right.
So let's be clear with that. But if you are going to steal, please do it better than these two dunderheads in these two instances I recently heard about. So the first one, a guy did very well in the poker room, had a lot of cash on him, right? Did not take the security escort out to his car, which I highly recommend to everyone. Not for you and me, that, you know, no one's going to jack us over our $16 profit,
right.
But
right.
For people that are really good, right? Take that security escort, but he didn't, and got robbed. I think he got followed home or something like that and got robbed, which is always very scary, right? But,
yeah.
But, and I don't mean to laugh, but the guy's all right. So, Mensa candidates that robbed him not only took his money, but took his phone. Now, you don't have to be a technological genius to know that within about a half an hour, the cops miraculously found the criminals. So if you are going to jack someone, don't steal their phone. If you do steal the phone, turn it off. People can track these things.
Oh, morons.
Isn't that great? I just, you know, I kind of want to be there for when the cops show up, you know, and just have them see whether they just – how long it takes them before they just burst out in laughter.
Totally. And the look on their faces of the ones who actually did it, you know, be like, how'd you figure? And then they, oh, the phone, you know.
Well, and they probably had even no idea, too, right?
So, right. You
know, stupid NSA. So that's the first dunderhead. The second one, I was talking to a poker manager, and almost the same situation. Guy had a very good session. Was a little too cavalier about racking up and counting his money in the poker room in full view of everyone, right? And of course, that attracted not only people that go, wow, I want to be like Mike, but also someone like, I want to be like Mike, but he's taking all of Mike's stuff.
Oh, man.
Right? Yep. And so robbed him in the parking lot. But not only did they get the cash, but they also got the highest denomination chips that poker room issues. So predictably, somebody just randomly shows up the next day that really shouldn't have $1,000 chips on them and tries to cash them in. And the book room, the cashier staff said, where'd you get these? Oh, my friend Joe, he gave them to me. He couldn't make them over here, so he just told me to come over here and cash them in for him. Okay, that's very nice. We're going to hold them here for Joe, and you tell Joe to come by here someday and pick them up.
Oh, man.
So here's the other thing, and this is less just hit you in the head with a brick, obvious as the phone thing, right? But these poker rooms don't have a lot of high denomination chips in the highest ones, right?
Right.
This particular poker room is 1,000, but there's some that are 500,000, right? They don't have a lot of them, and they take great pain to know exactly who has them at all times. You know, some have RFID chips in them. Some casinos, you actually sign them out and sign them back in, and so they're very careful even when you lose them that they know who you lost them to and who's cashing them in. So this isn't like, you know, finding a bus token somewhere and just showing up and being one of 4,000 people saying, hey, can I cash this in? Yeah, sure. It is an immense red flag. So I bring those things up just to, as I tell my wife when I watch reality shows a lot, just to remind myself how wonderfully awesome we are. That we are always going to be slightly more successful than the average criminal out there.
When you talk about the big chip, too, that reminds me of the I think this is what happened during that, was when Tyson and Holyfield fought, and they had that big fight or whatever it was going on at MGM, and people were just stealing chips and running out the doors with these massive chips, and they tried to come back and catch them in like a week later, and they all got caught because they didn't realize that, you know, you just don't show up a $5,000 chip at the window or something, and they'd already changed all the denominations and everything, so when they came in with the chips, they were screwed or something like that. But yeah, how do you not think to yourself, that's a pretty big chip? Isn't it pretty obvious that I don't know, you show up in your rags?
Yeah, I mean, that one's not as bad as the phone thing, I don't think. But again, I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's just, it's very interesting. So, I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to steal the high denominator chips, what I told a poker manager is the first thing I would do is just flush them down the toilet. Not at the Borgata. but throw them in the sink, the sewer, or wherever. I don't want them. Though I guess if you're a really good criminal, the best thing to do is to sell them to somebody for half the value and have them think that they robbed you and have them get in trouble. But just be sure you have a big ski mask on and you have one of those little, voice modulator things. There's absolutely no way they can track it back to you.
Or you could do like 21 in the movie 21, and they give them to strippers to cash in for them.
Yeah, there you go.
Then they give them the money.
All right, so moving on to ways that poker players are very smart instead of very stupid. Former poker pro Jonathan Diamond says his poker background deserves credit for making him a successful executive with Airbnb. Diamond tells Business because, quote, poker refined my analytical abilities and helped me think critically and solve problems quickly. I learned how to calculate expected value and make decisions based on incomplete information, skills critical in my current position. So I brought this on for a couple of things. One, I think it's an absolutely amazing poster for the poker is a skill argument, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And also that I'm a recent convert to Airbnb. I have booked like a ton of Airbnb stuff, and it's a really great site. So they're not sponsoring us. We don't get anything for it. But I think it's a really good company doing some good things out there. And it's great that they hired a former poker pro who's actually using his poker skills to make the company more successful as well as himself.
Right.
Yeah, nothing to add.
Well, the thing about Airbnb was it took me the longest time to figure out what it was. You know, the way they spell it, you know, I'm like, what is this Airbnb? You know, you see it on like the Yahoo feed, and I'm like, I don't know what this is. Then when I finally figured it out, I was like, oh, okay, this sounds okay. And then.
Yeah, I'm going to say you're probably not their target audience.
Yeah, I'm not their target audience. I know that I watched Shark Tank a lot, and there was some company that wanted to. They were renting out houses near college fields, you know, where they have big football games and all this stuff. And
right. And
the guy's like, well, how is this not Airbnb? Like, how could Airbnb could just make a sports category and crush every one of you? And so he's like, I'm not interested. I'm out. You know, I'm out. All five were out like in 5 seconds as soon as they said that. And, but I mean, I just don't really travel like you do and everything. So, and when I do travel, I usually just go back home and stay with my family and mooch off them like you're doing right now.
If they were smart, they would charge you. They would put their listing on Airbnb, but only open to you.
But whenever I hear stories like this about poker pros succeeding in business, something like that, I often think of the poker pros who get asked about like stock markets and stuff like that. And, you know, it's very similar to our lifestyle when it comes to decisions to make at the table, decisions that you make in a tournament, decisions you make, on the stock exchange. So I always think a lot of these qualities are transferable to real life, and this is a perfect example. And I like that you talked about it critically too. I like critical thinking. I like having, you know, as much information as possible before making your decision when you play poker, and that's what he's doing with his business. So it's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, and I'll say this isn't on our show notes, but I was thinking about this morning, and certainly talking about this conversation came up. Yesterday was Uncle Scott and Nephew Noah, a super fun party night.
Yeah.
I got to take my 10-year-old nephew out on the town, right? And so we went to the arcade, and one of the ticket games, you know, which, by the way, is perhaps the most ingenious business ever. You know, we got 575 tickets, and we ended up with, like, 7 Tootsie Rolls.
Yeah, I know.
$40 that we spent on the game.
Right? I know.
But anyhow, so I introduced him to Deal or No Deal, which they have in these arcades now, and you get the tickets for it, just like the real show, right?
Right.
And it's exactly the same as the show, except you don't have Howie Mandel annoying the hell out of you. But, you know, you pick your briefcases, and then you get the banker that calls you, and then you make Deal or No Deal. And then I thought it was interesting because my nephew had never heard of it and sat down. And initially he didn't think it was as fun as the, you know, whack-a-moles or whatever else that he win tickets with, right?
Right.
But and every time the banker came on, I stopped and had a conversation with him about how the banker came up with the math to make the offer, right? And I don't know, he's 10 years old, so I don't know whether he really got it, but he started thinking about it. And towards the end, he was like, Uncle Scott, we never take the first deal, right? And I'm like, no, you never take the first deal. But then we kept up, you know, we got to the point where he got a good idea of what the banker was going to come back with. And then the risk of continuing on, of course, he's just like his Aunt Laura. He doesn't care about the math. He just keeps hitting the deal, no deal.
Right.
And so he gets the 6 tickets instead of the 78 tickets. So he cost us about 4 Tootsie Rolls yesterday. But I think it's actually a very interesting game for lots of things. But I think, again, it's one of those things where you bring in kind of your poker background makes that game easier, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're trying to figure out, it's almost like calculating pot odds.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know, it's exactly like that, really. You know what's out there. You know what's left. You know that he's starting to crack a little bit. Hey, you're not one of those uncles that like takes over the whole game experience, starts enjoying it yourself, and leaves him in the corner or something, are you?
Street Fighter, I've never played Street Fighter. I hate those little kind of fighting kind of games, right?
Uh-huh.
But that's my nephew's wheelhouse, right? So we played, it was one of those kind of two-person things. But
right.
I did the beginner level first where right. you can't have the person challenge you, so I got used to like kicking people. and then all of a sudden, then we were fighting each other, right? And I took that little kid down, man.
Very nice.
Destroyed him in both the first two. His face was like, And then, of course, I had to go on and continue playing and beating up all these computer opponents until I kind of asked him to tap in and, you know, finish off the last guy. But, yeah, so there was a little bit of me that came out yesterday where I was like, man, I am, like, smoking on this game, and you sit here and watch me for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I've taken, you know, the nephews and the grandkids and whatever to these places, and I have to resist the urge, you know, because, I mean, I grew up playing video games. I'm sure you did, too, and... So you just want to get in and you're like, oh, man, I could crush this game if I was playing it, you know. Or when they had the Guitar Hero, then it's like, oh, I can't stop. I want to play it so bad, but I'll be playing this for an hour if he's sitting there, you know. So I just have to resist the urge.
Well, the good thing in the modern arcade thing is that so many of them are two-player games now. So
yeah,
you know, we played, like, the Jurassic Park together where we were shooting the whatever the dinosaurs and stuff. And we're doing that together. And then if one gets knocked out, then you just swipe your card again because we had the unlimited card and jump right back in. So
yeah.
It's more of a communal thing now in the arcades than back in the past when, you know, we played a two-player Ms. Pac-Man and I had a turn that lasted 7 hours before the next person did it.
Or you're playing with your nephew and it's like you're against your nephew and you, like, just keep killing him. And he's like, you know, Uncle Scott.
Only in Street Fighter.
Gotta get better, kid. This is what real life is like.
Didn't know there were 7 other ones.
Only in Street Fighter. Unreal.
All right, so on Sunday, I was a guest on Al Spass Positive Poker Insiders webcast and talking about how Ante Up got started and how we do all we do. So we kind of get those questions from fans a lot. So it's actually a really good interview. He's one of our columnists and really enjoyed doing it. And Chris is going to post a link to the video in the recap that he posts on PokerRadius.com. Encourage you to check it out if you're interested in how we got going and how we do the things we do. But if you don't want to wait for that post, you can just, I assume, go to – it's on YouTube, so you can search for Scott Long, Positive Poker Insiders, and check it out. Let me know what you thought.
Yeah, it's one of the very few times you'll ever see Scott Long and Positive Poker in the same sentence ever.
However, more often than you'll see Chris Cosenza positive anything.
That's right. That's absolutely true. Sorry. Hey, it's time for Ante Up Updates. Mohegan Sun in Connecticut will host an Ante Up Poker Tour Championship event April 2nd to the 10th. The 8-event series ends with the $1,100 buy-in main event, the winner of which will appear on the cover of Ante Up Magazine. For more details and a complete schedule and discount room rates, visit anteupmagazine.com/Mohegan Sun and stay tuned for more announcements on 2016 Ante Up Poker Tour locations.
And I'm going to jump in here real quick just to let you know that one of our super fans, Drew, who lives up there, sent me an email. He's like, man, I just booked my room for the Ante Up Poker Tour, and wow, did I get a really, really good deal. I don't know why you guys aren't talking about the room rates more on the show. So now we're talking about the room rates. I don't stay at Mohegan Sun often, so I don't know how great they are, but apparently, according to Drew, they are phenomenal. So
awesome.
Yes.
And as Scott mentioned earlier, don't forget that we've migrated our Ante Up group discussions to PokerRadius.com, a great poker networking site. Basic memberships are free and get you access to the Ante Up group discussions, and upgraded memberships get you access to discounts on poker products and automatic entries to contests. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. This comes from Carrie. She says, I'm listening to episode 147 with Joe Navarro. Love it. She's got the number down and everything.
That's exactly.
And he recommends walking around the room and observing tables before settling in. While I would love to do that, I have never seen that at a casino where I play, and I'm curious as to how acceptable that really is in poker rooms. I think that most folks would balk at that. I actually have done this. I specifically...
In fact, actually, you did it on a Carnival cruise ship and almost got your ass kicked, right?
Yeah, how did you remember that? Yeah, so one time I was on a Carnival cruise, but I wasn't going to bring that story up, but I was watching them play. It was only one table because it's that electronic table where they take, you know, 87% rake. And this lady kept standing in front of me, like, trying to block my view. And I'm like, what's going on? And then she's like, he can see your cards. I think he's giving the guy information over there. I'm like, lady, if you knew who I was, you know what I mean? You would. So, but that wasn't it. I've actually done that, though. I've actually walked around, like, a card room just to see who's playing, see what games are out, and then if I see a particular table that I think, has a lot of chips on it. I watch that table to see if they're good players or if they're just, you know, some people are drunks, you know, whatever. I've actually done that, and no one's ever really given me any guff. You're allowed. It's a public room. You're allowed. I mean, they could throw you off the property if the property doesn't like what you're doing because it's their property. But I've never actually, even as a reporter, you know, that all the times I covered the World Poker Tour at Foxwoods or the World Series or whatever, and I realize in those surroundings they kind of expect reporters to be there, but some of them don't. Some of them don't understand that. I've never really gotten any. Guys, a lot of them like to look up at you and be like, hey, what's going on, and talk to you and stuff. So I don't think I've ever heard of a property saying, don't walk around, look at the players, or if you're not in a hand, you have to be in this reserve area or something like that, or in a table or game. I've never heard of anybody saying something like that as far as their casino rules or card room rules, but I've done it. I've actually done it at Derby Lane. I've done it at the Silks. You know, I've walked around and just watched the games and thought, this is a good game, and I'll be like, hey, can I have the seat here? You know, because it's open seating a lot of times. If you have to wait for a seat, then it kind of makes no sense because you don't know where you're going to sit, and there's no way you're going to keep all that information.
Sure.
In
you. You could do a first table change, though.
Yeah. If you get a real good table in mind, yeah. But even then, by the time you actually sit down, those guys might have moved or left. So,
yep.
You know, and the other thing, too, is that when I think about the level that I play at versus, you know, for me to really investigate these people, most of the time I'll just play ABC Poker against most of these people. I'm just going to win anyway. So I don't really need to observe them. But it would help. It definitely helps. It couldn't hurt.
Yeah. I think a couple things. I mean, one, there are certain games that probably have different rules for it. Like, you know, some of the big money, high level games tend to have a little bit more security, or at least a rope around it or a railing or something like that. So you want to be mindful of that. But the general 1-2 Nova, I mean, you're never going to run into that.
Right.
But I think a good rule of thumb is just be respectful. I mean, I understand what Kerry's saying and not wanting to make somebody uncomfortable. I don't think any of us want to make anybody uncomfortable in a game that we're not playing in, right?
Right.
So just be cognizant of that. You know, you don't want to be, like, too close. You don't want to focus maybe on one player so much that they think that you're getting ready to jack them and take their $1,000 chips and try to cash them in later on, right? So, you know, just kind of be it's kind of like a one of my old coworkers, like, we were talking about, you know, when somebody came to work wearing a really weird outfit or something, like, hey, did you check out Tomo? And then that person would stare, like, no, don't stare. Pretend like you're looking into the sun. Quick looks. So, yeah, I mean, just kind of be respectful and not be too close or, you know, encroach on anybody's space. And then, yeah, there's probably some people out there that will probably say something to the dealer, hey, what's this person doing? Making me uncomfortable. And then the dealer or the floor, somebody will ask you to leave. And that's the worst. It's not like they're going to pick you up and throw you out the window like Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop.
Right.
You know, But as Joe said, I mean, it's, you know, if you're going there and you're serious about playing, and it's good to take that lap around and see what table is going to be better for you. So certainly encourage it.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of settings, too, where the walk-by traffic is encouraged. That's the whole point of putting the poker room in the pit area or...
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So people just walking by anyway. They're not going to know whether you're just walking by or if you're actually staking out their... You know, their tells or something. So there are a lot of scenarios where you can just totally get away with it anyway. But there's nothing wrong with it. It's not angle shooting. It's nothing. It's just you're just doing some research while you're there and then happen to sit down at that table and make some money later. That's all it is to it. But I've never actually heard of anyone saying, you know, you can't do that, or I've got recently thrown out. You know, is this fair?
Yeah, actually,
you know?
I can't even off the top of my head remember any time anybody at the table that I've been playing at has said something.
Yeah,
me neither. Other than... usually it's like girlfriends hanging out behind boyfriends. And I hate to make that sound sexist, but that's usually what it is. It's not like, but you know, like, and usually those folks are really respectful about asking, you know, hey, do you mind if my friend here hangs out and watches?
Right.
Some people say no, and some people say yeah, so it's whatever. But, I don't think anybody that's just a random player I have ever encountered saying, hey, that guy's making or that woman's making me uncomfortable standing there watching.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, I think a lot of people like the – I mean, again, poker is a very ego-driven sport, right? So I think sometimes people are very happy when there's actually spectators watching them, like, trap you and bluff you and take in a big pot, right?
A lot of them are, yeah. They're, and you know what? That's, now I think about it too, and that's how I became best friends with Freddie Deeb.
Yeah.
Just walking around, he kept looking at me. And so I'm finally, he's like, what's going on? I'm like, hey, buddy, what's going on with you? He's like, I don't know. So I start talking to him. Next thing you know, he's calling me up on my cell phone. I'm like, holy cow, Freddie Deeb's calling me. So maybe you make a friend out of it. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antiup Group discussions. Comes from Matt McKinney. Says, I was playing 2-3 spread. Now, I got to stop you right there.
Yep.
How do you play 2-3 spread?
You know, I was going to wonder that too, but I don't think it's germane to the discussion.
So okay.
Move along.
All right. So, one of the biggest card rooms in Arizona, and he says, when the following situation happened, before the hand was dealt, Seed 8 had pulled out a $100 bill to reload, and the dealer had seen it and called for chips. The player limped into the pot, leaving him with $18 in chips. The flop comes out, and he announces that he is all in, but he only puts in $18. The dealer was trying to tell him that he is in for $118. But the player was arguing. I insisted the dealer call the floor so they can make the decision, even though I agreed with what the dealer was saying. The floor ruled that the player was only in for $18. I will never argue with a floor person because their decision is final and it won't get you anywhere, but I didn't feel that this was the right decision. I would appreciate your insight.
Okay, so Elliot's finishing up his big tournament up there at Hollywood Toledo, so I didn't want to bother him with this one because I think this is pretty easy.
Right.
Outrageous! Use my Johnny Cochran voice. Really, I'm just dumbfounded here. How could any floor rule that you're only in for 18 when not only did you pull out the $100 bill, the dealer saw it and gave it to the chip runner to get chips, and presumably said 100 behind, as they always do, right?
Presumably. We don't have that information.
Well, we don't, I guess, but I'm going to take Matt at his word that at least the guy took out the $100 bill, and he says the dealer had seen it and called for chips, so that enough there, I think, means that the guy indicated that he wanted to have 120 in front of his stack before the hand started, right?
I guess. I agree. I mean, 100% of me agrees with Matt and you, and I'm just wondering what really transpired in that. Hey, Chief, I'm going to want $100 after this hand. Okay. Maybe.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Probably
so
was.
That's the thing.
I'm interested to hear the actual floor ruling.
Right? Yeah, I know. I just don't. And that's why the floor agreed with that. Maybe the floor heard him say, hey, he pleaded his case and said, hey, you know, I wanted it for after this hand. That's why it's not in front of me. That's why I didn't put it under the chips.
But even that, who says that, right?
I guess.
You take a bill and you have $20 in front of you in a no-limit game. You intend to use that money right now, right?
Well, he did say it was spread limit, so that's why I'm kind of confused about that, too.
But it's 2-3, so I don't...
Yeah, I mean, how do you get all in for 18 if it's spread limit?
Oh, well, that's true, yeah. I think it's 2-3 no limit, but whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
But beyond that, okay, so obviously we don't know exactly all the particulars. We only know what Matt said. But we can say this for certain... I agree with you, never argue with the floor person, but I would disagree with you in asking the floor person to more fully explain the decision. There's
right.
nothing wrong with ever doing that. And also saying, hey, you know, hey, and again, it's all in the approach, right? So as long as you're off, you're being very respectful about it, you can just say, hey, I'm just curious why you didn't do that. So had he... won the hand and argued that he would get 120, would you argue that he only gets 18?
Right.
And then find out what he says. So, I mean, because those two things have to be the exact same, I think. So, the other thing I'll say too is the floor person's decision is not final. I know several times that the person in the hand, usually one affected by the ruling, ask for almost like appeal, ask for another floor to come over to make a ruling. Now, some rooms won't do that, but some will, and you won't know until you ask.
That's true.
I wouldn't use it if I know the ruling was the right way but didn't benefit me, and I'm just hoping to angle shoot and get a one. Obviously, I would never do that. But if I'm confident that the ruling was incorrect, as I'm confident based on the information we have here it is, absolutely, I would – respectfully ask to get a better explanation. If I didn't like it, to ask for another ruling.
Yeah.
So they could say no and not get it, and then you could. But in those cases, what a lot of our listeners do is after they rack up for the day, they go find another floor or ask the poker manager and explain it and try to get an opinion. Obviously, really good floors, really good poker managers, they're going to be cautious about answering that because they're only getting your side of it, right? And not
exactly. And they don't want to put their own person out under the bus, you know?
Right? I mean, you don't have to walk out of the room not understanding something.
Right. It is a peculiar thing, and I really wonder what the floor decision, the decision was, but what the floor person actually said to Matt or the table.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the thing. Cause to me, it seems obvious this guy had 118 in front of him, but then again, we don't really have the conversation spelled out to us when he handed that $100 over, so maybe he told the dealer, hey, I didn't want the 100 for this hand, and then the dealer didn't hear that. And now the floor person gets told that the floor is like, hey, you didn't hear it, but he said that, you know, or whatever. Because when I play, if I'm taking out 100, I just put it under my chips for that hand. Then when I'm done, I hand it to him before the deal and say, hey, get me chips.
Right, but in some rooms, the $100 doesn't play.
Oh, yeah.
Or even if it does, the dealer wants to get that off the table because they want chips on the table. Instead. So they'll, you know, sometimes I'll do that. I'll do the same thing you do. I'll take it out, put it under my stack, and the dealer will reach over and ask me, hey, can I have that right now? I'll get you chips.
Right.
All right. So, you know, a couple things that I think could be and I'm not suggesting poker rooms do this, but again, there's a solution to all this, right? There's one, if rooms had big enough fill trays, they didn't have to use chip runners, and I understand why they don't want that. They want some rooms want as little money in those chip trays as possible for security reasons.
Right.
But if that dealer had enough in the tray to give him the 100, she would have clearly done that, right? And then there would be any question because now he has a stack of red in front of him, right?
Right.
You can't say, oh, no, hey, that's for the next hand. Yeah, too bad, buddy, right? Or if they just had like a lammer or something that's got 100 on it, you know, to throw in front of you. Now you've got this lammer in front of you that says, hey, I've got 100. The chips aren't here right now, but they are in play.
Right.
That might avoid it as well, too. But again, I think we're kind of solving a problem that doesn't need to be solved. In almost every room and almost every other situation, this would not be the ruling based on the information we have. So.
Very good. Speaking of solving problems, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. Very exciting. Here we go. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a $5, $10 Omaha 8 game. The action has been pretty steady, not a lot of folds pre-flop, and plenty of action post-flop. The blinds post, and it's to us, under the gun, with the ace of clubs, king of diamonds, jack of diamonds, tray of clubs. This is a good hand. We are going to raise it up. The MP calls. It's folded around to the cutoff who calls. Button calls. Small blind folds. Big blind calls. And we're going to a flop with five players and five big bets in the pot. The flop is as ricky-ticky-tavy as you can get. The queen of spades, 10 of diamonds, 9 of clubs comes down, giving us the nut high, a backdoor flush draw, and no chance of it getting split by a low. The big blind checks and we bet. The MP raises, and everyone else folds. We raise, and the MP caps. We, of course, call. With 9 big bets in the pot, the turn is the 8 of hearts. We once again lead at it, but this time the MP slows down and calls. Interesting. There are now 11 big bets in the pot, and the river is the 8 of clubs. So, the board paired. What's the move?
All right, well, good thing we're playing limit, right?
Yeah.
This is an easy check call for me. Not much to think about, in my opinion. Our opponent's action indicates to me either he has the same straight as we have or a set that's improved to a boat. So to me, there's no upside to us betting and opening ourselves up to calling a raise when we're beat. If he has the same hand, we won't lose any value by checking. And if he has a boat, the last call is worth it to find out because of the size of the pot means we only have to be right once out of every 10 times for it to be a profitable call. But that changes when we bet and get raised.
I love that you always go first.
Because then you don't have to say anything, right?
Yeah, well, not just that, but I mean, just it's just complete. I mean, I don't have to really, in this case at least. I mean, when you do go first and it's not complete in my mind, then I can just rip you apart. So
right.
It's always great that you go first. I appreciate that. But no, I totally agree. That it's a clear check call here. There's no low hand and no benefit to betting with larger hands possible out there. What benefit do you get that maybe he's got the same hand and might fold? That's not going to happen. That he might have a worse hand and bet it? He's not going to. You know what I mean? So It just seems like there's no upside to betting, like you said. And
well, yeah, and I probably should clarify. There's not that there's no upside. There's possible you'll get called down here by a two-pair hand or something like that. Possible. Unlikely, but possible. So it's not that there's no upside, but clearly the downside's way out.
Yeah, the risk is not, you know, justify the reward. I mean, I just don't see... There are way more instances where it could hurt us than where, and especially in Omaha 8.
Sure.
You know, I know there's no low here, so it's only a high, but, you know, once that board pairs, you know, just get out for whatever you can and hope that you have the best hand or tie, you know, and then move on. Especially because it's limit, too. It's, you know, why waste, you know, you're always talking about trying, you don't want to waste a bet in limit. You know, it's about saving bets and extracting bets. This isn't an extracting situation when we have the nuts and, you know, or something. This is a, hey, you know, let's have showdown value and we hope that we have a, you know, the winner here. So, yeah. Hey, all right, here we go. Here comes part two.
Hello again. This to me is a clear check call situation. What was he betting so heavy with on the flop? Maybe a set? Perhaps Jack 8? Maybe it's something like Queen 10 Jack 8, and the 8 filled him up in a way we weren't expecting. At any rate, I think check calling is the best move for us. We check and are disappointed when our opponent checks behind. We turn over our straight, and our opponent mucks. So, did we lose value here? Or was he folding to any bet we made? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, sometimes a bet saved is a bet earned. But sometimes a bet saved can be value lost. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, I'll say we only lost value in this hand if you want to be results oriented, and we never want to be that, right?
Right.
There's just simply no logical reason for us to bet here. And quite honestly, if our opponent couldn't beat our straight, it's hard for him to imagine calling our bet or even raising us because it's limit. If it's pot limit, I could see him maybe raising us to try to, you know, push us off the hand. But it's limit, so,
right.
You know. It's a really dangerous move to raise with nothing and limit, because you know the person only has to call one more bet. So we lost no value here.
I don't think we lost value either, because like you said, if we did bet, I don't think he calls. Right?
No, absolutely. Yeah. If he didn't have his beat there, it's really hard for me to imagine calling.
Yeah. So I think we played it just right. And when there's incomplete information, you know what I mean? You just can't be results-oriented like that. You know, you just got to say, hey, I think for the moment, I made the right move, and I found out later it wasn't the right move, but there's just very little information to indicate this guy only had two pair or whatever it was. So I think it was the right thing to do.
Excellent. All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This one comes from a longtime listener, Jimmy Fulton. And he's taking us back in the DeLorean here, Chris, back to 2012. In the Mid-City, can't remember all the specifics, but I looked over it, and there's enough here that we can work with. So.
Okay. I love his name, too. It always reminds me. I always think of it as a country western singer cowboy or something.
Perfect name for it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Country, it has to be country western. Can't it just be country?
No, it's got to be country western.
It's country be like Blake Fulton.
Yeah, he's like a cowboy, man. Fulton. He's quick draw.
But Jimmy Fulton, that's a western country western. Now that Jimmy hates us, we'll go ahead and dissect his hand. He says, I was playing the World Series of Poker Circuit Turbo event, right?
Right.
Down to 10 players now, congratulations. And he says, since it's a turbo event, there are no antes. The blinds were 5,000, 10,000. He regrets that he does not remember his stack size, but claims it will not matter much. We'll make the judge of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's around the middle of the pack. And as he said, reminded we're 10 players, so we are all at the unofficial final table. All right. He was in the big blind, and it folds around to the button, who makes it 50,000. He says this player tends to fold when he has 3-bet and had been at the last 3 tables with him when we were moved, so I was pretty certain he would fold to any raise. And we look down to pocket 9s.
Okay. So,
I'm sorry. Hold on. We have pocket 9s. He says his plan was to move in with those because he had them covered. But then the small blind was to fly in the ointment and moved all in himself.
Oh.
He says, I couldn't recall playing with him throughout the tourney. He says, I asked the player for a count. He counted the chips in front of him. And when I took that amount out of my stack, it left me with $120,000 left. So this is a situation. What would we do?
So we have 12 big blinds, but we have a chance to knock out a player and maybe get some dead money too, because he was saying the first guy made it 50K. So he might.
Actually, possible to knock out two players, assuming the first player comes along.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's either dead money or whether he comes along. Depends. So if we would have 120 left. See, that's tough for me to know, because I don't know how much he had to get to, you know, how much was this all in for to make us to 120? I mean, I'm not going to risk 480,000 on pocket nines and be right. That crippled. So I don't really have all the information like you're saying. But in this instance, I might let it go. It feels like this guy's got a hand that's not aces, kings, or queens, but could be something like jacks or tens or two overstars. And do I really want to raise four cards for that money and be down to 120 grand if the other guy comes along? So I might end up folding that, you know, just because you had a plan. That plan was without that information. Now you've got more information. Now you don't have to follow that plan anymore.
Right.
You know, this guy could be isolating with like a, you know, like I said, a pair of tens, pair of jacks. He could be isolating with ace king, and then I'm looking at racing four cards with my piddly nines.
Right.
I think I would let it go, especially if this guy's got a chance to knock somebody out now or be nine handed at the official final table, and still have a bunch of chips. You know, why risk it with nines? I think I would let it go.
All right, so here's kind of why I'm going to call here, is that, and I'm just going off the information that Jimmy's giving us. He
right.
says the initial player says tends to fold when he is 3-bet. So obviously the tendency is for him, if we would to raise here, would be for him to fold, particularly because he's up against two players that have him covered, and his tournament life is on the line, right?
Right.
And if he has a similar hand to us, or like an ace queen type of hand, he's got to think that he's in the same position that we're worried about, or worse, right?
Right.
So I'm going to say a lot of things are lining up here for me to believe the button is going to fold. And obviously, he could have aces, kings, or queens, or something like that, and be wreck us, right? But I'm going to assume that he is going to fold. And to me, if I could pick up that 50K from him, plus knock out this other player with all the whatever money he has. And you're right, it kind of depends on what our chip stack is. But I'm going to assume it's not something outrageously ridiculous. With my nines, I think my nines are pretty solid against one player, even a small blind player. Because, again, the small blind player could also be kind of taking advantage of the quasi position. I mean, I know small blind's not a great position, but it's folded around at the button, right? So he could be raising with... He could have the same read on the button player that we do, right?
Maybe.
And know that if he raises now, that he could pick up that money, and then we have to have a really strong hand in the big blind, which obviously we don't really have a really strong hand to make that call. So there's a credence to the small blind being lighter than we might think he is here.
I do like the idea you said about the other player could have that read, but you know we follow this guy around for three tables, so.
That's true. But
you're right, though. That is something to consider.
And you're right. You said that this player was kind of new to the table, too.
So for me, you know, I like the idea of taking out two players at once. But, again, we don't think that player is going to – now that you've brought it up again, I don't think this guy maybe will call. He may just fold. He might just been trying to steal the blinds and, you know, because he was on the button and just moving on. And now that we've shown – you know, strength, and then another strength, he's probably going to let it go unless he has the big three or something. So, like you said, so I still think I'm going to fold because there's too many what ifs here for me, and I don't want to race. You know, why would I want to race and then cripple myself? You know, at this point, we are 10 handed. We're at the final table of a circuit event. Do I want to? I want to make the wisest decision I can at this point. I've gotten this far. I just feel like calling here, you know, cripples us if we're not crippled. I mean, we'll still have a decent amount of chips. We'll have 12 big blinds.
Yeah, 12 big blinds. I think in a turbo is pretty good for me. And we'll be moving into the small blinds. We only have one more blind before we have a whole round of free cards.
Right. I just don't know if I want to
Ants either. So I mean, our stacks are going to get out of the Annies. So.
And the other thing, too, is we don't know the stack sizes. I mean, we don't know if we just went from 600,000 to 120
right.
for this.
In fact, actually, I was going to bring this up. So the other information that's important to me, and I know it's probably not important to other people, would be what the payouts are here. You know, and I go back to my deal or no deal lesson with my nephew yesterday. I think it you know, I know everybody likes to say, oh, I play to win. I'm only concerned about winning. Well, that's great, whatever. But I'm not. I play to get the maximum value out of my situation. And when my situation changes, sometimes I see more value in cashing than I do risking everything to win, right?
Right.
Now, I will say it's a circuit event. And rightly or wrongly, I am more inclined to try to win a circuit or a World Series event because I want that ring or that bracelet, right? And
right.
And being able to, you know, have my obituary say that I was a circuit winner.
Right.
Rather than just winning a random tournament. You know? So I'd probably be more inclined to try to win. So that might affect this too. I mean, if I could really stack up here, this might be – I think this would be a good opportunity. If my goal here is to win and I think the chips that I can win from here will put me in a really good spot, I'm willing to gamble with this hand, whereas I normally may not. Particularly because I know I've got the 12 big blinds.
Yeah, I agree. I just like you said, I'm the one that wants it on my headstone as well. It says, "Hey, WSOPC champ," or whatever. Won a bracelet or won a ring because he didn't play nines out of position against a button in a small blind. You know, whatever.
Right,
so,
right.
All right, I'm gonna fold. I'm still gonna fold here. So,
all right, you're gonna fold. I'm gonna call. So
yeah.
Let's see what happens. All right, here it says, however, I did not notice the dealer took out the 50K before I got a count from the player. So when I thought I had 120 left, I actually would only have 70K left.
Oof. No, I'm definitely
so it's not going to change your opinion because you're already going to pull it,
yeah.
Right? It is going to change my opinion, though. I don't think that's enough. The risk is too high for me now. 12 big blinds I can work with. 7 big blinds I can accept if I had a really good hand and I just got unlucky.
Right, and you're putting in a 5K on the next hand.
Right, exactly. So I think there's a big difference in that 50K here for me, so I'm going to hold.
Nice.
All right, our hero says, I had actually been told twice during the tournament that I needed to ask the dealer specifically for a count to get the dealer to do it. Because I didn't, I used incorrect information for my decision. It says, does the 50K difference change how you would proceed? Obviously, we decided we had.
Right.
It says, I ultimately called, and the button folded instantly. All right, so we had a good read on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
The small blind asked me if I had jacks, and I knew he had to have tens at that point. He did, and I bricked out. Two hands later, the blind's about 20K, 10K, 20K, and I busted when my ace jack failed to improve against the same player, too. Ouch.
Oof. Yeah, tens. There you go. That's what I was wondering, was if he had a hand that was marginal but still good enough to do that with.
Right, yeah.
You know, because then he's hoping
that's
that we...
There, but, you know, that's almost... I hate to use the word cooler there because it's probably the wrong word there, but it's most unfortunate that he actually had tens there. Now, obviously, he could have had jacks, queens, kings, aces, all those hands as well, too. But generally, in these kind of situations, I think a pair is generally pretty good. And the only thing I worry about is about the pair being too small where he's got more opportunities for random overs to have a chance to beat me.
Yeah. And the other wild card, too, was the big blind. The button. You just don't know if he's stealing or if that one time he has a hand. Since you don't know, you have to consider that in your play, and that's what I did. This is why I folded. And then just happened to be the guy I had one of the hands to. I was speculating that he could have because of why he did that. You know, if he had aces or kings, he probably just raises there. He doesn't shove, you know, because then he's like, okay, I'm just playing back at you. I'm hoping to get somebody to call. You know, why shove with aces when you don't need to there?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the big information we're missing here is where the money bubble is. And since he got knocked out later on and didn't say he cashed or anything like that, I'm going to assume that he didn't cash. So that would change things as well, too, I think.
I don't know, though. A World Series of Poker circuit event has to, no matter if it's a turbo, has to have more than 100 people in it. I would think he cashed.
I would think so.
No?
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
I mean, I don't know.
I agree. No, that's what I'm saying. But it would be interesting, I mean, to see that piece of information.
Yeah, I'd like to know how much his stack was. I mean, he's obviously not going to know. He's remembering this from three or four years ago. But it would be nice to know what his stack size was before he made that decision, too.
Well, and more importantly, what the other stack sizes were.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What the effective stack was, everything. So, but, you know, given the information we have, it's funny that you and I went different directions, but then we found out 70 grand, then it was obvious to fold to me.
Well, I'll tell you, this is not one of these hand of the weeks that I am going to go to the mat with my decision on. You know, if somebody tells me, if nine people say they would have folded here, I'd be like, no, I can definitely defend a hold.
Right.
Just think, all the information I have here, this is an opportunity for a player like me who doesn't like to gamble very often. This is a gamble that I kind of liked.
Yeah.
At 120 left. But
right, right. Absolutely.
Which I think really the lesson here is, and I know Jimmy knows it, but hopefully the rest of our listeners learn it. I never trust anybody on their count.
No.
And there's really no reason to. I mean, why not just, if you're going to ask somebody for a count, why not ask the dealer and make sure, and then watch the dealer count it out. And then, because the player's not going to count it out in such a manner where you can actually count it, right?
Right.
Often they're going to say, oh, it's about 60 or whatever. And then you find out he's got like two big chips hidden under one that the dealer never noticed. And, you know, I'm always going to ask the dealer. I mean, it's not a matter of it's a turbo, so I don't want to waste the time for a count, because you're asking for the player for the count. So,
plus, you never know. I mean, the chip runner might have a $100 bill in his hand coming back with chips for you. You know?
Absolutely.
He might need those 100 chips. Jimmy, can't wait till you drop your latest single, buddy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.